You're listening to the Language Assistance Podcast, brought to you by the British Council. For more information about the British Council or the Language Assistance Programme, please visit britishcouncil.org.
Hi everyone, my name is Finola and you're listening to the Language Assistance Podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by my colleague Felicity, who works on the China programme, and two former English teachers from China, Lorna and Jasper. So to start with, Felicity and I are going to give a brief overview of the key points about the China programme, including eligibility. So if I pass it over to Felicity.
Okay, so anyone wishing to apply to the Language Assistance Programme must comply with a number of general eligibility criteria, which are detailed on our website and also on our recent podcast episode, How to Apply. For anyone wanting to be an English teacher in China, there are a number of additional country-specific criteria which you will need to bear in mind. I'm going to run through these now. You must hold a valid UK or Irish passport. Unfortunately, we cannot accept applications from anyone who does not have a UK or Irish passport. You must be 55 or under by the start of your post. You must hold a clean record. This is for visa purposes. So candidates who have a criminal record of any kind will not be considered by the Chinese immigration authorities. Unlike applicants to other destinations within the programme, all candidates for China must have graduated from university with a bachelor's degree in order to start their post as an English teacher. For any current undergraduate students in their final year, we realise you will not have graduated before applications close in February, but do not worry, we still encourage you to apply. However, you absolutely must have received a hard copy of your degree certificate by mid-August. You are required to be available for this programme from mid-August 2020 to June 2021. Other key points to bear in mind are, you do not need to be able to speak Mandarin in order to apply. You do not need prior teaching experience in order to be an English teacher in China. If your application is successful, you will be enrolled on a 60-hour online TEFL course. This is a condition of your position as an English teacher in China, and the course needs to be completed in a small time frame of about 2 months from April to May. For more information, you can find a whole host of relevant information on the Country China page on the British Council Language Assistance website. At the bottom of the China Country page, you can actually download a 42-page country notes document which contains lots of useful information that will help build a picture of what the programme is like from a logistical perspective. Soon after the applications have closed on the 5th of February 2020, we will also be hosting a webinar for all those who have applied to be an English teacher on this programme. In this webinar, we will delve into the details of the remaining parts of the application and visa process, and we will discuss what it's like to live in China. Invitations to this webinar will be sent out shortly after applications have closed.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Felicity. So now we're going to move on to speak to two former teachers who carried out a placement in China. So what we'll do to start is we'll go to Jasper first and then Lorna. Just give us a brief overview of when you went and where you went.
Hello, I'm Jasper. So about 3 years ago, I went to Chongqing. And I taught at Chongqing Foreign Language School. I originally applied to teach English, and the school, as soon as I arrived, said, oh, you can teach a English debating module as well as an American history module, given your degree.
Hi, I'm Lorna, and I went to China in 2017 to 2018, and I taught in a kindergarten in Qingpu in Shanghai. I did not teach a history module or a debating module. Mine was a little simpler.
That's okay. There is no requirement for any teachers to have to teach those modules. But again, if you've got that expert knowledge, Jasper, I'm sure that came in very useful.
It was a sudden change. As soon as I arrived, they were giving us an overview in each of our CVs and what it looked like. So it was very tailor-made, which I really liked about that school.
Amazing. So what was, for both of you, your main motivation behind choosing China? as a place to go to teach English?
It was the challenge of going somewhere without knowing any of the language beforehand and really challenging myself and pushing myself, as well as the employability with China in so many different workplaces around the world. It's really good to have that international knowledge of having Chinese and just experience of working with Chinese companies and seeing how it works out there.
Absolutely. And for you, Lorna?
I was actually really lucky. I went to Loughborough University, who offered a Mandarin module alongside my degree. So I'd already studied a bit of Mandarin before I went, and I'd managed to build in a few history and international relations modules around China. So I'd always had it that I really would like to go. And being a language teacher in China offered me the opportunity to go see places that I'd only ever read about and also travel and improve my Mandarin. Like Jasper said, it's an excellent way to get employability skills and really stand out when applying for jobs.
Absolutely. I think it's such a valuable experience. In regards to the responsibilities you had as an English language teacher in China, what would a typical week be like? Were you involved in things outside of teaching?
So originally I taught senior 2 students, so I had about 18, 19 classes a week. Then it moved up to 20 classes in my second year, and then 21. Each class was 45 minutes, and at first it was 16-year-olds, then 15, and then 14 in each of the 3 years. Each day, it depended on your timetable. So some days I only had 2 classes a day. Other times I had 6 classes in one day. So it was very, very rewarding. Me and my colleagues all said we were like magicians at the end of the year because we knew where all the jokes were on each of the classes and how we went there with no teaching experience, no teaching background, and was able just to motivate and inspire these students was really rewarding. And I was really lucky to meet some Chinese friends out there. And they put me in contact with setting up an American studies course, which I did in my degree, because he wanted one in his training center. So I was really lucky just to get some more experience and opportunities and just make everything worthwhile.
Definitely. And for you, Lorna, what would a typical week be like? Potentially a little bit different in the kindergarten.
Yeah, a little bit different. And I would argue there's never a typical week in China sometimes. My lessons were a lot shorter because they were younger children. So I was teaching from 3 to 5 year olds. So the 5 year olds would have half an hour, 4 year olds would also have half an hour, and 3 year olds would have 20 minutes so that they wouldn't be overwhelmed with what you're teaching. And I used to teach every class within my own kindergarten. There were around 18 lessons Monday to Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday I would do something called fun sessions, which was not based around teaching. It was based around trying to immerse the students in using English, so it would be a less formal way of teaching. When I say less formal, my lessons were never really formal, because with younger children you have to make it very fun. So a lot of songs, I still remember all the songs that I sung with them and stuff like that. So my working week was very different. Like Jasper, I was really lucky. I met some really good Chinese friends, and we used to go to lunch quite regularly. So I got to taste loads of great food. They would show me the best food to offer, which I'm sure I wouldn't have found by myself. Evenings used to lesson plan, and then at the weekends I would go with other people, maybe out or to do something. Like Disneyland was really close to me, so I was really lucky. But lots of different things to do.
Your weeks can vary in terms of your free time. So sometimes the students will have exams and you'll get like a 4-day weekend to go somewhere. And I really try and encourage anyone who goes to China just to keep going to different places, because each place is so different and the food is amazing in each place.
Okay, quick question for both of you. Do you have a top place you went and a top meal you had?
Oh, wow. My top place that I went was in Dunhuang, which is like Western China, where all the Mogao grottos are in Gansu province. And that was like near the Gobi Desert. And one of my favorite experiences, one of my favorite days was, this is in my second year when I learned some Mandarin. And it was just me in front of all these Chinese tourists who are like 40, 50-year-olds who are camping in the desert together. And we first ate one big hot pot meal. And then after there was karaoke and music. And bearing in mind, this is just a desert. So it was so mad and chaotic, but it was so amazing as well, because it really highlighted how I grew from being quite shy when I first came to China, and then getting that confidence and that boost to speak Chinese to these lovely ladies who are showing me their culture. And then at nighttime, I remember like my tent blowing away in the wind in the desert, and then setting it up again. And then when you woke up, you saw this beautiful sunrise across the sand dunes. So that was one of my favorite days. My favorite food, I was really lucky to go to Xinjiang, and like the lamb and the meat over there is just so amazing.
That sounds amazing. Karaoke in a desert is quite difficult to beat. But Lorna?
I don't know how I'm going to follow that. I've got quite a few places that I've really loved. I really love going to Xi'an, which is where the Terracotta Warriors are, which I had always, since I was a little girl, really wanted to go to see them. So I got there ridiculously early, and we luckily made it before all of the crowds. They actually opened earlier than what they said on their website, so top tip. And we went and we saw them, and I was just so excited. I took so many pictures. There was also a mountain I climbed, not in Xi'an, but near the Yellow Mountains. And that was amazing because it was just absolutely pouring it down. And I remember thinking, what am I doing? Because I was in Converse, I wasn't even in proper mountain climbing shoes. And I was like wet, soaked through. And we stayed over a night on the side of the mountain. And then in the morning we woke up and it was completely clear and it was beautiful and sunny. And you could just see for miles and it was absolutely gorgeous. In terms of food, I'm actually vegetarian, so it was sort of very interesting sometimes. Probably not as interesting as what Jasper managed to eat. Favourites that I still like try to find, like maladang, which is like a broth, like a soup. And you could like put loads of different things in. It was kind of peanut based as well, the one that I really liked. Food, any food in China, absolutely amazing. Highly recommend just trying things.
Top tip for vegetarians is go to any temple that you can find, because every temple will have a restaurant and they do these vegetarian buffets like the one in Chengdu. And I was really lucky to have my mum and my auntie to come to China, and I was able to like translate for them, and they were so happy that I was doing this. And then one of their favourite meals was a vegetarian restaurant in a temple in my city.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that. The sort of interpretation of vegetarianism sometimes can be a bit different to what we're used to here. So you have to remember to be as clear as possible that you don't eat meat and you don't eat fish. I once had a situation where I said I didn't eat meat and I was really proud of myself because I said it in Mandarin. And then I was like, I'm okay with whatever you recommend. And they brought out a hot pot with fish heads, which I couldn't eat. And I had to try and explain that I still couldn't eat that. So yeah, highly recommend, even if you don't speak Mandarin, just try to get somebody just to translate your requirements. And if you're allergic as well, just ask somebody before you go, so you can carry a card with you just to show people so everybody understands.
I forget that. Yeah, my friends all turn up to these restaurants and they're like, oh, but you eat fish. So they're bringing out all these different fish dishes. Yeah, having a card around really helps. And just even learning some, if it's through a tutor, I was really lucky to find like a private tutor. So I had a class once a week, and that just helps in terms of your living.
That sounds like a very good top tip for any vegetarians out there to avoid a fish head soup. Thank you so much for that brief overview. I'm now very hungry. But we're going to go on to discussing, especially in terms of the job itself, what do you think were the main benefits and the biggest challenges to working as a teacher out there in China?
I think one of the biggest benefits is that it is so rewarding. Like, you come away from work and sometimes it can be very hard. You can have really hard days, but when you have a good day, it's absolutely amazing. It's like cloud nine. I had a student that just, it was absolutely fine. She just didn't want to speak. She was very, very shy. And she didn't speak to me for the first, like not even in Mandarin, for 5 months. And then one day I gave her a sticker and it sounds so small, but she said, thank you. And it was in English as well. So it was like a double, like, oh my goodness. And I was so excited. It was so rewarding. And it made like a whole week. I was so happy. The challenges are, and it's a benefit at the same time, is that China is a very changeable place. Things often happen very last minute and things change very last minute. So your class size can double within like 5 minutes before the lesson and you don't have everything that you could have if you had an extra 15 children. Or you might be told that you've got to deliver a lesson now, or you might be told that, oh, somebody's going to come watch you. It can be very challenging and very sort of off-putting to start with, but I would just encourage anyone to sort of go with the flow. It's easier said than done, but it's a really important skill that has honestly really helped me, not just in my work life, but in my personal life, is just to go with the flow, take a deep breath, and then try to like problem solve. And it's a challenge, but it's also a benefit.
Absolutely. I think that's very, very good advice in terms of going with the flow. And for you, Jasper?
The main benefit is definitely your public speaking skills. I don't know about other programmes in the British Council, but for us, it's just you in front of all these 45, 50 students. And for you to be able to like control that class and to have like different games or resources that you can turn to, for me, that is just really rewarding. And seeing how a student progresses. So in my job, I had to make an exam for each of the students. I had to assess their ability, and it was so good to just to see how at the start some students wouldn't even talk to me, wouldn't say even any Chinese words like Lorna. And then at the end, they were like drawing pictures, they were doing these assessments and became so interactive in a game. And you really see your organisational skills improve and how you become even more flexible and adaptable to each problem that comes to you. If a class who are being really noisy, you'll know how to handle it. And that's really helped me in my job now. I remember my first day being my like worst day, just because it's your first time in front of students. And that is always going to be hard, no matter how you take it. And from there, it's just onwards and it's just upwards. And as Lorna said, that's last minute. A lot of schools, they'll say at the last minute, oh, this holiday is gone, or you'll have to work this day. And you can prepare for that. And I would advise like having some go-to lessons beforehand, like resources. There are many resources on the British Council website and online for ESL. And you can just have a lesson in mind. And then on that off chance, when you do have to teach class at the last minute, use that and engage with it. As well as the challenge, I'll just see lifestyle in a city. It depends what city you're in. It took me about 1 to 2 months to fully adapt. And even then there are challenges. And you can just grow from that. There's never a dull day in China.
It makes everything way more exciting that way. So I think I know the answer to this one, but would you both recommend China from your experience on the placement?
Yeah, I would really highly recommend it. It's just such a random place that you're not going to get the experiences that you get in China or anywhere else. Also, just like from a point of, I hadn't really traveled before I'd gone to China, and it gave me so many opportunities, not just to travel within China, but to also travel parts of Southeast Asia as well. I met brilliant people. I would happily travel back to China. I would really recommend it.
And for you, Jasper?
Oh, definitely. I keep telling to like any like young person that I meet, like just to try and go out there. When you have all these opportunities on your doorstep, even though if you're shy beforehand or you need that confidence boost, China is really a place that you can just grow and find yourself, as cheesy as it is, but it can be one of those places.
So you both spoke a bit about your level of Mandarin. Lorna, you went out there with some Mandarin knowledge, and Jasper, you learnt as you went. On leaving China, how confident would you say you were with your level of Mandarin?
I was really lucky, but before I went to China, I decided in my final year to do some like Chinese culture modules, because it was my last year. I finished all my exams and my essays. So I had just a foundation of the tones. And then as soon as I arrived, start making like new friends and then having these classes. And at the end, in June, I achieved HSK4. And there are like 6 different levels of HSK. So getting the 4th one, knowing amount of characters, I just love seeing how I grew from that.
Definitely. And for you, Lorna?
I was just going to say congratulations to Jasper for getting HSK4. That's amazing. I dream of that one day. I never took a HSK at uni, but I was roughly apparently around HSK3. I didn't take tuition, but I learnt it as I went when I was in China. And the thing I will say is I would recommend doing tuition. That was one of my regrets, that I should have taken tuition. But you also learn Chinese that you wouldn't find in textbooks, like Liu Liu Liu, which is like the equivalent of saying cool. So my Mandarin improved, but only in sections that I was using it regularly. So like if I wanted food, I could order food really well. Taxis, okay, at the hospital or ordering KTV, having general conversations that I would highly recommend taking tuition because I wish I had done a bit more.
Yeah, I just want to add that me and all the other language assistants who I met in China, we all met actually yesterday just to have a big like China reunion all together. And each of us had like, it's one of the best things we've done, just learning different phrases from a tutor or having a class here and there. And that really brings you together when you're all learning another language. Also, your students might try and teach you Chinese slang, and just bear in mind that the slang and the language that they teach is going to be very different to what you learn.
Definitely. And on that note, do you have three top tips, be it about the teaching, about the culture when you go over there, about sort of the best way to spend your time?
Number one is expect the unexpected. Do not go to China with expectations of how things are going to be, because China will flip them upside down and completely disorientate you if you have expectations in the best possible way. It will exceed expectations. It's such a beautifully random place that you can't really go into situations thinking you know what's going to happen. Number two, again, is go with the flow when things take an unexpected turn. It will help you in later life in different situations where you have to think on your feet. And my third thing is say yes. Obviously, as long as you're comfortable. Say yes to all of the opportunities that life offers you. Before I was going to China, I'd often say no to different things if I was a little too shy or I thought that it would might be a little bit difficult. Whereas in China, I think I said yes to a lot of opportunities and it led me to many beautiful and different places and experiences. So say yes.
Excellent advice. And Jasper?
For me, one of my first top tips would go to Western China. Like Western China is so beautiful and amazing with all your sand dunes, different temperatures. It has snow. And like Tibet at the end of Sichuan province, that is an amazing place as well. And so many people, they say to you, oh, go to Beijing, go to Shanghai, go to Shenzhen, and that's all Eastern China. And Western and Eastern China are so different. And it's great just to see all of the places. There are so many different opportunities out there. So a lot of my colleagues, they joined China-US Association events. And we all went to these events all together, all dressed up. And you can just meet different people from all different walks of life. I think there's a Chinese proverb out there that says, learn a new thing from every person you meet. Yeah, as Lorna said, just say yes to what you can. Even if it's speaking to a family when you're on a sleeper train, that small conversation with a child or that family can really just brighten you and keep you going. And my third top tip, expect bad China days. Expect a day where you might feel a little bit down and use the different support connections, like using your family and get your family to install WeChat so you can video chat them or talk to them. Or if it's talking to some foreign friends or going out and having a big meal together so you can just talk and just get everything out. Or meeting different Chinese friends, having different like social groups. So expect a bad China day. But in the end, as Lorna said, it's going to be random. It's going to be weird, but it's going to be amazing as well.
Just to add on to Jasper's point, I think the third point's really good. If you're having a bad day, reach out to people, because 9 times out of 10, they're going to be able to empathize and support you. Don't keep it all in, because it will make it worse. Try to speak to people about it and try to build a good support network whilst you're in China. Your friends will become like your family. And also, obviously, make time to call your family at home as well.
So another question with China is, did it take a while to get used to different cultural norms out there that might have been different to how you would approach certain things in the UK, for example?
For me, it was maybe like the hierarchical structure of things with schools and stuff. Like if I wanted to do a special lesson where I had to give sweets out, it wasn't just like the teacher above me. I would have to go to like the head. or like when I was giving gifts once, I bought two plants, and one plant was a little bit bigger than the other one, and I tried to give it to my friend who had helped me all the way through my experience and helped me translate things and stuff like that, but she refused it because she said it should go to the head because they were higher up. That took me a long time to understand. I think in general, just try to be as open as possible about cultural differences. There's a lot of things that are similar, but also just keep in mind that you are in China and that you should try and adapt the best that you can. Sometimes that will feed into bad days that you have because you don't understand what's happened or why things have happened the way they've happened, but just try to be as open-minded as possible.
Perfect. And for you, Jasper?
For me, it took about 2 or 3 months to really adapt and get used to it. And that came down to more of a lifestyle. So different habits, you might see the street being messy one day, or you might have different smells. They love to eat like durian, and they love to eat like chicken feet and duck neck and all the different parts of an animal. And it's really easy just to get used to that. You don't have to eat that. No one forces you to. And there's so many different varieties of dishes other than that. As well as the apartment that the school gave me was not in like the best 100% five-star quality condition. And so as Lorna said, just adapt and make the most of it. So what I ended up doing in my second year was buying a load of things from Taobao, like Chinese version of Amazon, buying a carpet, buying different lamps and things that make you feel at home. If you do have one of those bad days, you can always just buy a load of chocolate on Taobao. And if you have a problem setting it up, your colleagues will be able to help you as soon as possible. They all use it, especially during Singles Day.
Very solid advice. And I particularly like the one about the chocolate. It's so great to see how you've kind of learned so much in terms of your skills, language level, and also just world awareness, really, and embracing a completely different culture. So what are you currently up to? And does your experience in China help you in your current jobs?
At the moment, I'm in a temporary position, and I've been so inspired and really empowered by the China experience that I applied for a working visa in Canada, and I'll be going out to Vancouver at the beginning of January for a couple of months to really get myself in there, go into another world, another culture, another community, very different from China, but I'm really excited to see how the China experience has moved on me and how I've just pushed myself even more. And I've chosen Vancouver because of the high Chinese population there, so I can still keep up my language. I'm really hoping now that after I've been to China and I've got this sudden interest for Korean education and policy, so I really hope that I can develop something even after Canada or before Canada with all the different organisations that are available. One of my colleagues, she went to China with an arts degree. And being out in China, she was producing these different scarves and designs, and she was creating these pictures from all Chinese idioms using her connections. So no matter what degree you have, don't feel like that you have to have a humanities, you have to go study history or geography or sciences. Even if you're an art student, you can really grow in China.
That sounds fantastic. It's great to see how you've not only embraced one culture, but now you're going to go and learn so much about another one. And Lorna, what have you gone on to do?
I actually work at the British Council now, so I'm very happy. I work as part of the eTwinning team, and that means we help teachers to work together internationally to create projects together online. After coming back from China, I kind of sat and was like, what do I want to do? And I knew that I wanted to do something with the British Council. So I've been very lucky and have managed to gain a job here. I would say that China really, really helped me get this job in terms of I pretty much used China as an example for every single question I was asked. I'm very happy, and I get to travel with my job as well, which sometimes brings up some very interesting situations. And China has given me the confidence to travel and the confidence to even move to London, because I'm not from London, I'm from Leicester. So it's given me a lot of confidence. And also, like Jasper said earlier on, I can now happily stand up and talk in front of a group of people and not be too nervous, even if I'm called to talk to people very last minute sometimes as well. I feel like China basically taught me that it's okay that you can just speak in front of people.
It is really great to hear how this opportunity has helped you in what you're both currently doing.
Do you both have plans to go back to China at any point?
Me and my colleagues were talking yesterday about just going back there all together and seeing different places that we haven't seen yet. So yeah, it's always going to be a part of us, and I'm still very lucky to keep in contact with the Chinese friends I have out there. And I video chat one of them every week to see how he's going and progressing. And so you've really made friends for life being out there. And it's because like when you live out there, you live in a school. I don't know if Lorna, how many teachers lived with her, but I had 5 or 6 of us. And we had a few Americans as well. And because that you spend so many hours of the day together, either eating or socializing or even teaching, you quickly become friends for life.
Yeah, I would really love to go back. I've got a few things that I didn't manage to tick off my list. So I'd really love to go to Harbin, to the Ice Festival. And then I'm really jealous of Jasper that he managed to do the western part of China, which I'd also love to go visit. I also have a Chinese friend and a friend that's still there as well from the language assistance program, still based in Shanghai, and I need to go back and visit them, definitely. And you do definitely make really, really good friends over there. So yeah.
That's so great to hear that you're both keen to go back. So thank you so much for joining me today. You've been fantastic in terms of giving your experience, giving excellent top tips, including buying chocolate off the Chinese version of Amazon. Who knew? Do you have any final comments you want to say about your experience or anything to give to the future generation of teachers in China?
I would say go for it, enjoy it. You're never going to experience anything like it. Just have fun and support each other when you're out there.
Yeah, as same as Lorna, just apply for it, go for it. It may seem very daunting going to the other side of the world, but China's really a pivotal location. Like if you are interested in seeing Cambodia, Vietnam, Australia, New Zealand, and you are worried with money, China is really in one of those central locations. They can have like, I've got a £200 flight to Sydney from my city. You can really go to different places very easily being in a central place in Asia, and bring your family out there. Like my mum and my auntie, they went out there and they absolutely love it. They love the technology that's on offer.
Excellent advice, definitely. Thank you so much again, and best of luck with everything you end up doing. So that brings our China podcast to a close. I hope that's given you listeners an insight into the possibilities of being an English language teacher in China. And we look forward to receiving applications from the future generation of English language teachers.
You've been listening to the Language Assistance Podcast, brought to you by the British Council. For more information about the British Council or the Language Assistance Programme, please visit britishcouncil.org. Or why not follow the Language Assistance Programme on Twitter @LanguageASST.